This is the Student Hour, student radio for the city of Portland. The Student Hour is powered by AM 1450 KBPS, the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Brought to you by Portland Radio Project 99.1 FM, your nonprofit community radio station, online at prp.fm. And brought to you by KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM and KBOO.fm. Also brought to you by X-Ray KXRY 107.1 FM and 91.1 FM, online at xray.fm. This is the Student Hour.
Hey, you are listening to the Student Hour, powered by KBPS. In this episode, Moda McChesney and myself, Dane DeBlock, interview representatives of the Military and Draft Counseling Project. The project is part of the War Resisters League, specifically the Portland chapter, which is a regional nonprofit. They serve as a community resource on issues relating to military service and military enlistment, as well as the military draft and conscientious objection. We met them when they came to Benson, coinciding with a military recruitment visit. During the visit, we asked for an interview with both the military recruiters and anti-recruiters. Here's what the military recruiters had to say.
Hello and welcome to the KBPS Portland Radio Project 1 Hour Show. I'm here with three recruiters for the National Guard. So, can you please tell me, which branch of the military did you serve in and what are your ranks?
Staff Sergeant Benjamin Kammerer, and I served 10 years in the Marines and currently in the National Guard since 2012.
I'm Sergeant Kartzog. I've been in for 12 years within the National Guard.
Sergeant Jesse Madden, I've been in the National Guard for 11 years.
So, why do you think people should join the military?
There's so many answers going on.
It's a loaded question.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's also weird, like.
Yeah, it depends. It really depends on what you want to do with your life. There's several reasons people join. It can be anything from service to country, wanting to continue your education in college, come out debt free. Insert reason here.
Yeah, that sums up. For the most of it, I joined because I was actually looking for more of a family unit, coming from a rocky background myself, and like I sought family. I was that guy that watched Black Hawk Down and believed in the brotherhood. I'm gonna be honest, like that was me. So that was fun.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I joined because I wanted to go to college, but we couldn't afford it, and I was planning on doing my 6-year contract and then dipping out. And now I'm 11 years in and a recruiter.
See, I kind of got the double end of that. So, yeah, lower income family. I tried to put myself through college for about a year, and that got expensive quick. So it was kind of a combination for me of being able to afford college and being able to maintain a job that actually pays well. After my first 6 years, I decided I liked it, and I've stayed around for 18 now, so...
So is there any programs for people who might want to, if they're curious about joining the military?
The National Guard is kind of that trial program when it comes to the military. We only work 2 days out of the month. It's very part-time for all the benefits that we do get. But if somebody is interested in the military life and like what those 2 days of the month would be like, we do offer the Guard for a Day program. It's obligatory free. I hope I'm using that word correctly in the right sentence. But
would you like to buy a house for 100?
So essentially what it is you would come out, train with us for a weekend through various activities that we do on a Saturday and a Sunday. We feed you, you sleep in the barracks, pretty much everything except for a uniform. And at the end of it, if it's something that you enjoy, we talk more about it. And if it's something where you're like, nah, this ain't for me, then, that's it.
So
yeah. Well, at least you can say you tried it. I was going to say, I heard that you tried out Guard for a Day recently. How was your experience?
It was pretty okay. The fun thing was getting to do the training, except for the physical training. That sucked.
Yeah, 5 a.m. is
Wait,
not
can you say
for
that?
Everybody.
Yep, I can say
So, what was the weather like over on the beach?
Oh, it was clear, just it was cold.
Winter has that effect on people, but
yeah. Did you get a chance to talk to any of the other soldiers there, or people that have already joined the National Guard?
Yep, mostly talking to the drill sergeants.
Mm-hmm. Good. What kind of feedback did you get?
Honestly, I just asked some questions that, you know, that a lot of people would have, and I think one of the questions I asked wasn't really that okay.
What was your question? No, I'm curious. Sorry, I'm very curious.
Any minds want to know?
Well, I was asking, and I was saying that I didn't want to join the National Guard because I didn't want to be dispatched against innocent protesters, which happened during the George Floyd riots.
We didn't. Well, hold on. Let's. We didn't get dispatched against them. We got dispatched. That was our MP unit out of Clackamas. But we, our goal is not to attack or
oppress anybody's First Amendment.
Yeah, all of the soldiers, like when you join the National Guard or any military branch, you become a citizen soldier. So what that means is, Monday through Friday, I used to work for a hospital. I went into work, I did my Monday through Friday, and on the weekends, I would put on my uniform, I would drive to my unit, and I would, you know, do my thing. When it comes to the riots, we're there to plus up local law enforcement. Our job is to try and keep everything orderly. We are never there to escalate things beyond what they are. We try to keep everything civil, we try to keep everything calm. We have never been used
in an authoritative way.
Yeah. I think one of the largest misconceptions, specifically when it comes to the Oregon National Guard, is that we're always associated with your active duty branches, so Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. Even though we wear the logo, we have the uniform, it says U.S. Army on it. So like for us specifically, we're Oregon Army National Guard, right? So we are not necessarily an Army, our mission is different. We are here to protect the state of Oregon because every state is entitled to a well-organized militia to protect themselves from overreach. And that's where we come in. Our biggest thing is disaster response, medical help, and civil unrest. That means if there is a flood like we had in Salem, I want to say, I could be wrong the year here, I want to say it was around 2016. We had the floods out in Salem and we had dispatched our engineer unit out of Clackamas to help repair that, deal with the flooding. During COVID recently, we had
a significant amount
of our medical staff were at the MOTA Center handing out COVID vaccines, making sure people could get appointments. We were even transporting people there. You look at things like Hurricane Katrina in the past. We do search and rescue every summer. Regardless of what job you have in the Guard, you can go down south and you can fight fires. We'll send you out to Salem. You get your red card certification, head down south, go help out, fight some fires in the summertime. So in that aspect, our mission is quite different than your traditional military branches. It's more of a protective posture that we take. So not necessarily that stereotypical aggression, I guess, is kind of what it comes down to when people think of the military like that. Like when you think Marines and stuff like that, it's a much more aggressive mindset. That's not what we do. And we highly encourage education. That is our biggest thing. And that's why we offer the most benefits for education. We want you to stay here. We want you to go to school. We want you to have a life outside of the Guard. Like Sergeant Karjak said, it's citizen soldier, right? Citizen first, and you're a soldier. You're here for your community. You're here for your state, and you're here for the person to the left and right of you, and you actually are. The goal is not to go overseas or to hurt anybody ever. It is to protect people and keep everyone safe. And if that means, you know, your worst case scenarios, which is what we saw with Floyd, where you have to stand there and make sure that property damage isn't happening, no one's getting hurt. You're just there to kind of contain the riot, but not through violence. You're not there to oppress them. We're U.S. citizens. We have civil rights. We have liberties. I think, you know, protesting is something, it's a freedom we have. It's a freedom of expression, right? And we do what we do so you can have those freedoms. The last thing we would want to do is contradict ourselves by squashing that. But you have to now weigh that cost. Like, we're not going to let people hurt everybody. That's not it. We're here to help. We're here to protect. That kind of clarify our difference in mission from the regular branches?
Yep.
Okay.
So why is only 3% of the population able to join the military?
There's qualifications that you have to meet, and only about roughly 1% to 3% actually meet all qualifications, whether it be aptitude, physical, medical, education. You have to have a GED at a minimum or a high school diploma. Law violations, anything along those lines. Like Sergeant Kammerer was saying, you have to be physically able to manage the job, no matter your job. We are here for the state to begin with, So if you are physically unable to do so, the military is the only job where we can actually discriminate based on some type of medical deficiency. I don't know if that's a good word.
Usually
what gets people is medical. If you've ever broken anything, sometimes if it's a too severe of a break, there's nothing you can do, medications, anything along those lines. That's usually what kills it for some people.
But there are not ways around it, but there are
waivers,
and like if you've been off certain medications for a certain amount of time, you know, with doctor's approval, you can still join.
You've broken a bone and you have a current orthopedic evaluation saying you're good to go.
Yeah. I think that like the old analogy of where there's a will, there's a way definitely plays into like
for sure.
how much paperwork somebody is wanting to do. I have one kid, I don't know if he listens to the radio, but I'm very proud of him for, you know, staying focused. He and I came up with a goal for him like back in July, and he's been going through the hoops and doing all the paperwork and, you know, making the appointments to see who he needs to. He's down in Roseburg right now, and he's been coming up to Portland to see the doctors, and his motivation is strong. He saw a goal for himself. He saw a place. He wants the benefits of the National Guard that will, you know, allow him to go to school debt-free, and then when he's done with that, work from home, or like, as he put it, a beach in Mexico with his laptop. But, you know, he wanted that goal, and he's sticking to it, and he's enlisting this month, so I'm super excited for him.
Good for him.
So what are some of the upcoming GFAT events?
The most recent upcoming GFAT event that people will be able to attend would be what we have at Camp Rylia. It's Recruit Sustainment Program. What you'd have to do for that is meet with a recruiter and just answer some pre-qualifications, because we want to make sure everyone going is safe. And that will be December 10th and 11th. The next one we have coming up will be January 6th, also at Camp Rylia, and we will be doing the rappel tower, which is the second largest one in the country, being 62 feet.
Oh, it's so much fun. Did we cover what GFAD was? Is the Guard for a Day program?
Yeah.
Just want to make sure the acronym's not lost in the sauce on that one.
So what is the best branch for learning a language?
I don't think there's really, when it comes to language and linguistics, there's no best branch. We all use the same language school. It doesn't matter, Army, Navy, Air Force, even us. For us, when it comes to language, though, it's a little different in that the expectation is not just speaking it, but to read, write, and speak it fluently if you want to be like a certified linguist. So you have to kind of hit all three. You got to hit that trifecta. As far as foreign languages in the military are concerned, if you speak a foreign language already, or if you teach yourself to speak one fluently, as long as you are assigned and using that language while on orders, you do get extra pay for language. So for example, we had Najjar when myself and Sergeant Madden deployed in Qatar, and they worked the gates together, and he spoke, was it Arabic?
Arabic.
Yeah, so he spoke Arabic, and he would basically, anybody who came in the front, he would handle most of the conversations that way. If there's a civilian that's lost, kind of wandering onto the base, like, hey, no, wrong way. And then who was the other one?
Sergeant Radhika, she's fluent in Hindi, and there was a lot of individuals who were from India, Nepal, those kind of regions working. And occasionally we would have to communicate with them, and there's obviously the language barrier. So instead of everyone trying to play charades, we would just call Sergeant Radhika out, and she would help facilitate with the communications and alleviate any sort of stressors in that, like, facet.
Yep. So when it comes to actually learning a language, if you're self-motivated, we used to offer Rosetta Stone for free, and that was, oh my gosh, that was like early 2000s. But what we do is more of credentialing assistance now. So you get one free credential every year as long as you're in the Guard, and that can be used for language. There are some places here in Portland that do language training. So, you know, pick your foreign language, French, Spanish, German,
Russian.
Russian, whatever you enjoy. And we'll cover that cost from year to year. And if you would like to learn one on your own, that's great for self-starting. Or if you really want to take, you know, the challenge and try for a linguist school, it's, again, read, write, and speak fluently. And it's kind of a crash course. So I would say anybody interested in foreign languages in the military should probably kind of already know what they want to speak and start seeking out that training now and doing as much as you can on your own to prepare for those schools because they are very challenging.
So if you had to choose, which branch of the Special Forces would you join?
Okay. Are we talking within the Army or are we talking just in general?
Overall. Just in general in the military.
Yo, I'm going to go with whatever Special Forces branch Space Force comes up with. I'm going to be on that and I'm going to get my nerd on and I'm going to do a 5-year mission on the USS Enterprise as a door gunner. That's not a real thing, but it sounds cool. Shout out to Star Trek. Oh, that'd be cool. Space door gunner.
I mean, is it a solid beam or is it like a turret Gatling that fires multiple lasers?
I'm picturing like something from Fallout.
You're gonna try? You're gonna get yourself into? See, unprepared. That is unprepared. I honestly, so coming from a Marine background, you'd think I'd be like, oh man, I do MARSOC. Yeah, that's where it's at. Actually, Green Berets. Quite frankly, out of all the branches, I think I would go with the traditional Army SF. I like their mission. It's a little bit different. So in the Air Force, you have your pararescue jumpers and your combat controllers. PJs are cool. I will say that. They're the cool guys, right? They jump out of the plane, do the search and rescue, like high-speed Special Forces medics. When you get into the SEALs, you know, we that's your quintessential SF, you know, hardcore guy.
That's what I would do.
That's the word I got. Yeah. But that's the word I got to use for that because we're on the air and I can't. Yeah. But I like the Green Berets mission because it's a little bit different in that they're not necessarily as much combat oriented as they are more the role of a teacher and instructor. They will drop in, train indigenous forces to defend themselves and use that to their advantage. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. And when you look back at our current history and wars and things like that, we were at war for almost 20 years. Being able to raise a force in a foreign country that needs it and have them be able to self-sustain and take care of themselves is more of a permanent solution, I think, than just having troops on the ground. So that always appealed to me with them and their mission.
That sounds like a great reason. Also, to be fair, we haven't even had 20 collective years of peace. So how do you feel about anti-military people?
I mean, how do you describe this? I mean, it's one of those things where you
don't you guys go first.
Okay. Like, when it comes to anti-military people, like, they... Either two things. One, they have somebody that has been in the family where they have talked a lot of negativity about the military, which is understandable. Okay, the military is not perfect. For example, my nephew is wanting to go to college, but for the last 12 years, he's heard me talking about how, like, I go to drill weekends and I'm either, you know, death by PowerPoint or you know, I'm outside freezing because I joined the infantry, and you know. He's super tall, super skinny, and he's like, I don't want to do push-ups. And I'm like, cool. He's like me. That's mean. He's better than I am. But, you know, so we have people who have grown up listening to the negativity because, let's be honest, when you have a bad day at work, you go home and you complain about that to, you know, whoever you can because that's just who we are. But what you don't hear about is all the fun that I've had over those 12 years that I've never told him. But when he sees the pictures that I bring home, you know, then he asks questions, and it changes the topic to, yeah, I was talking all the time about it, but would I do it all over again? Most definitely. And then the second type of people that we have.
The conversation continues. To hear the full piece, go to kbps.am and click on the KBPS audio page. That is kbps.am. Now, let's meet the Military and Draft Counseling Project. They provide basic information to military service members and their families, including information on their legal rights and options under military law. They actively oppose compulsory military conscription and economic conscription. In addition, they also offer support related to selective service requirements and procedures, including draft registration, legal deferments and exemptions, including conscientious objection, draft resistance options and strategies, and finally, updated information about the selective service requirements for women. They give classroom presentations at Portland area high schools. This usually includes a panel of speakers with veterans of war and local peace and justice activists. Topics of discussion include veterans' perspectives on war, personal experience with life and death in the armed forces, and federal budgeting priorities. Recently, they have been attending between 10 and 20 presentations a year. Their goal is to provide additional public education and outreach. They do this by staffing an information table at community-based events such as career fairs, educational conferences, and youth-centered gatherings. Beyond these projects, the Military and Draft Counseling Project organizes an annual protest against militarism at Portland's Rose Festival in the form of Navy and Coast Guard warships at the downtown seawall, military recruiting booths at the fair, etc. They also organize sign holdings on the downtown bridges at various times, especially on tax day. For those who don't yet pay taxes, that's on April 15th. This includes pro-peace and anti-war messaging for rush hour commuters. They also collaborate with other organizations in protesting the escalation of war and occupations, including drone warfare and nuclear weapons. For more information, go to wrlpdx.weebly.com. That's wrlpdx.weebly.com, or contact them at wlr.pdx@gmail.com. All right, you are listening to AM 1450, KBPS Portland, and today we are going to be talking to some people who are in an anti-war organization. How would you guys describe yourselves?
Well, officially we're the War Resisters League, Portland chapter. The War Resisters League is an international organization based in New York City. And here in Portland, our focus is mostly around what we call counter-recruiting. That is, responding to the stuff that military recruiters do in Portland public schools and basically providing an alternative message about the military.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you do, just your day-to-day operations here in Portland? Mm-hmm. Is that 90% of what you guys do, or do you ever do outreach or any other programs?
Well, as part of that work, we do regular tabling, you know, doing a literature table in high schools, basically next to the military whenever they're in the high schools. So there are approximately 10 high schools in Portland. So whenever the military comes in, we come in with our table, too, to provide that alternative information. And it's all set up through the school district.
If you could have one message for students, what would that be?
Just to be really careful if you're thinking about signing up for the military and to get as much information as you can, not just from military recruiters, but also from groups like ours or from family members who may have been in the military, from other veterans, that kind of thing.
A lot of the time, military recruiters will talk a lot about the programs and other offerings through some of the academies that the different branches offer. What do you guys do if somebody needs that to be able to get an education? What is something that you guys can do to help relieve that burden and give other opportunities for those students?
Well, basically what we try to do is just explain that there are other ways sometimes to get money for college or to, you know, get the scholarships and that kind of thing. It's not... And the other problem is that when you go into the military, if you wind up with anything less than an honorable discharge, you won't get money for college. You know, and that happens to significant numbers of people. I mean, I would say about 80% of the students that I talk to, you know, they say that the main reason they're signing up for the military is because of the money for college thing, and yet they may not get it. You know, if they run into some minor disciplinary issues or other things where they get knocked down to a general discharge, they're not going to get those benefits. Does anybody else have anything to say about that?
Well, I think I read recently that of all of the people who go into the military, whether it's for college or otherwise, they're only 15% ever graduate from college. So that shows you that a whole lot of people get out early, get killed. They don't get that degree that they think they're interested in.
Another thing around that is that oftentimes people who are in the military wind up with PTSD when they get out, and they're not really able to cope with college. You know, it's not something they can do right away. And if you don't exercise those benefits, you know, fairly quickly when you get out of the military, then you also lose them. So, you know, it's it sounds great when you're signing up, you know, that there's the GI Bill that you can get money for college, but in a whole lot of instances, it really doesn't work out.
All right, so what are you specifically protesting? And this may seem like a silly question, but are you protesting the military coming to schools and talking to high schoolers and trying to recruit there? Or is your issue more with the military itself and, like, maybe not the idea of it, maybe it is, or, you know, with how the military holds itself?
Hello, Herschel here. We try to give the opposite view that maybe the military might give. I was in the Navy. And I didn't know this, but when you go to the Naval Academy, they march from class to class, get into formation, then they start HUP 2. There was TV shows about what goes on at the Naval Academy, and I don't think the education you get there would be quite the education you would get outside. I would not compare it to a regular college at all. They really kind of want to give you the basics, a lot of engineering, and try to avoid any kind of military education if you possibly can.
We actually think that military recruiters don't belong in high schools, that there's plenty of opportunity for students to go down to the recruiting station if they want to sign up, and that it can be really disruptive to have military recruiters in high schools. Here in Portland, we actually have it pretty restricted so that military recruiters can't just show up at high schools and, you know, walk around the halls and like they do in some places. That they can only be in the high school 3 times a year for each school and each branch of the military. So it's pretty restricted, and we know because we've talked to the recruiters that they really hate it here in Portland. I mean, they really chafe against the restrictions that we've been able to put in place over the years. So, you know, in a lot of high schools, they're just there most of the time, you know.
When we are looking at going back to some of the academies, your comment that the education isn't quite the same. The Air Force Academy, for example, is regarded as one of the highest education tuition-free high school or tuition-free colleges. Right, and that's not only just from people who are the recruiters, but from independent sources as well. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know that much about the Air Force Academy. I know that it's. I mean, you learn a lot about military, and I took ROTC in school, and I know when they talk about learning leadership, it's really a lot of followship. There was a guy who wrote a book about his term in the military, and he happened to go over there. He wanted to go get a graduate degree from the Air Force Academy or a degree. And so he went to Vietnam and saw what was going on and decided that it was not a good thing the U.S. was doing over there. So rather than have someone running around with bad information about the Vietnam War, he was placed in a hospital and told to work his way out. So he had to work his way out. Then he eventually, he didn't learn the education about what the U.S. was doing at the academy, but he saw it for himself over there in Vietnam. And he eventually wrote a book, and he went to El Salvador, I think, and he recognized some maneuvers by the Air Force, and he recognized these people that were trained by the U.S. dropping bombs on guerrilla. So I would think if it was really a good education, he would have known, been able to understand what's going on in Vietnam. One of the things they don't really teach you about in military recruiting is what is our foreign policy? It's usually about the benefits and retirement, early retirement. But they don't talk about foreign policy at all.
In response to that, a lot of people would say, well, foreign policy isn't the place. Okay. Sorry. I have it set up as mono, so when you move that, it also comes through as on my mic. No, so you guys are welcome to move it.
We won't anymore.
No, you guys are welcome to move it. It's just when nobody's talking. So then it, because this way we can just edit all the rest of this out. Opponents to what you are saying about the U.S. military and the recruitment and foreign policy. A lot of people would say, well, it's not really the military soldier's position to be able to make those decisions about foreign policy, right? And they are told, well, this is how our foreign policy is right now. It is completely dictated by the administration. And your job is simply to follow the best of our Constitution and the best of what the Commander-in-Chief says. What do you think about that?
Well, I think our military is doing some terrible things out there. And what would I point to kind of explain what we're doing? An example would be the My Lai massacre. And these soldiers out there, I think he killed about 500 people. And it was because of policy from higher up. These people didn't think they were doing something bad or wrong. They were following orders. And it got in a situation over there where they wanted a body count. So they were performing as they were directed. And I think without kind of knowing about how the military works, or you just follow orders, it kind of leads to post-traumatic syndrome. You just follow orders, and then after you get through, you find out that you've done something really, really terrible, and you have a hard time. We have PTSD. I think they're 2.5 times more likely to commit suicide, and it's a big adjustment for the people.
To go back to the question about the Air Force, what I feel like was asked is, how is the Air Force, you know, the Air Force Academy is very good at teaching, and I feel like your response was that it can't be a good, or you're saying that you don't think it's a good education because of all the things they're doing, and they aren't, like, you know, they went over there and they aren't thinking about it. They're getting PTSD and they aren't being, I feel like it's a moral thing. You're saying that they're doing these things that are morally bad, they're committing massacres, and I feel like, well, morals isn't something that's taught in schools, and maybe it's not the place for schools to be telling people what is moral and what isn't. And additionally, that's kind of a philosophical moral question.
Well, the other thing about the academies is that it affects a really small percentage of people who are going into the military. Our main problem with military recruiting is that, you know, it tends to focus on black and brown people who are in poverty, you know, that those are the people that they largely recruit. For instance, here in Portland, there's more intense recruiting at high schools like Roosevelt and Jefferson and Madison, maybe Benson just because of its specialties and so forth. You know, we call it the poverty draft. After the Vietnam War, the Pentagon changed the strategy from having a draft to recruiting students in high school. And so, you know, that's why they push so hard to get into the high schools and so forth, because that's how they recruit. That's how they keep their troops at, you know, at the levels that they need to be.
This is a book written by a couple of people, Army of None, about counter-recruitment. And one of the things we do at the tables is try to be sure that people have facts, because the last thing they sign, they get them to sign many times, and a lot of times that's to make them think they're already committed. But the last thing they sign says, nothing you've been promised is guaranteed. So this is a flyer we hand out. Are you thinking of joining the military to gain U.S. citizenship? There's an example in this book about a young man. He was a JROTC student, and he lacked support for success in school and beyond, and his father was deported to Mexico. And he was told by the military recruiter that if Sal enlisted, his father could come back to the U.S. His father begged him to enlist after high school. Sal later learned that the military was lying and that he couldn't help his father come home. So a lot of the information we have, and this is fact-checked, to the nth degree. I mean, the military recruiters pick it up, and I think they lose military recruiters, actually, because the facts are right here, and you can they're documented, and you can check them out. Part of the problem with talking to 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old, they don't have a lot of world experience, and it sounds good. You know, they're very impressed with the Marine uniforms that they're wearing, you know, with all of the epaulets. It looks really fancy. That isn't what they wear when they kill people. So they're impressing here, and it's like a game, like a shell game. You know, look over here, and then there's reality. And we have a lot of ideas, a lot of information that we hand out on alternatives to the military, other things you can do. And I hand out KBOOS information, and I know this station has a program on KBOO because they have a student program you can go down. And because I was in radio club and it really made a difference in my course of life, that's just something I like to suggest to people, other ideas to do besides join the military.
Yeah, so I believe that John said that it's a poverty draft and that it really targets black and brown people. Do you agree with that statement?
Mm-hmm.
How are they expressly targeting these people if you can only go to a school, you know, once, twice, three times? So how does that sort of extreme targeting work?
They have a lot of other avenues.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what you mean by one, two, three times, but the reason they target black and brown people and people in poverty is because a lot of those students feel like they don't have any other options after high school, you know. And so that's the big draw for the military. They can say, well, if you don't have any plans, we have plans for you, you know, and you know, they make it sound really good, you know. The recruiter can say almost anything that they want to a student thinking about signing up, and there's not going to be any repercussions for that. I mean, you know, I mean, they can lie, they can make stuff up, and you know, once they get into the military, they can't. It doesn't work to go back to the recruiter and say, you know, you told me this, and you told me X and Y is happening. You know, so there's a big push to get, you know, to focus on students who feel like they don't have other options after high school or aren't doing well in high school. For instance, I have two daughters. You know, they're nearing 40 now, but you know, but they went to Grant High School. My younger daughter was a straight A student. She, you know, she graduated with a 3.95 average and went to college and all that. My older daughter struggled in school. She probably had an undiagnosed learning disability, and she really struggled and wound up dropping out of high school in her junior year. And my younger daughter never heard from the military at all. My older daughter got all kinds of, you know, stuff from the military, even putting stuff on our doorknob at home, you know, trying to get her to sign up. And of course, she wasn't interested. I mean, I, you know, she knows what I do and so forth. But it, you know, it, that's the way it works. I mean, you know, the poverty draft is a real thing. It really focuses on students who just don't feel like they have other options.
John, I think they were referring to the kids only see them three times in their college year. But their budget is $6-7 billion a year for recruitment. Our budget is buttons and bumper stickers. So they are on... You need to take it from here because you know more than I do. They're on
media. Well, the other thing is that outside of Portland and other school districts, it's not three times a year. It's, you know, most every week that they're there. I mean, I don't know if you're aware of that, but...
The question that we were kind of wondering was your comment about how they have increased recruitment at Jefferson and Roosevelt and some of these other schools that are historically... kind of these black and brown communities. How do they increase recruitment at those schools?
Well, it's just more intense. I mean, they just, you know, they really work on those. They don't spend a lot of time at Lincoln High School or at Cleveland High School. You know, they're there. I mean, they're there regularly, but it's just more intense. At like when we go and do our tabling at Roosevelt High School, most of the students that come in have already talked to a military recruiter, and they're just checking in with their recruiter when we're there. I mean, that's what they're doing. They've already been contacted, you know, and they're probably well on their way to signing up, you know.
So it's by social media, lots of other avenues. They get their contact information because you have to opt out to stay out of their sites. And And if you don't opt out, then they've got all your information that the school district has. So they don't just talk to the students in high school. Oh, no, $6 million.
Yeah, you've probably noticed it on the student reg form. On the bottom, there's a thing that allows you to opt out of getting information, being contacted from the military. But you have to do that, you know, or else you're on their list, you know.
So are you saying that they primarily target the neighborhoods surrounding Jefferson and Roosevelt and those types of high schools?
They recruit everywhere, but yeah. It's just more intense, you know.
In these specific neighborhoods around these schools?
Yeah.
I would personally disagree with you on that. I live a block away from Jefferson High School, and I have never seen military recruitment outside of schools. Mm-hmm. Anywhere in Albina and North Portland, going around anywhere there. So I'm curious how, I'm just trying to get your guys' opinion here, how you think that they are targeting these areas more heavily when, for me personally, I have seen more outside in these wealthier areas of Lincoln and Grant versus the Jeff and Roosevelt, where that's where I live.
Well, I'm not saying that they're walking around knocking on doors, but they focus on those students and they get the information through the school district, you know, through the reg forms, you know, when students, in other words, they get the names, addresses, and phone numbers of every student who doesn't opt out, you know, and they just tend to spend more time, you know, recruiting in areas where, you know, there's more poverty, fewer kids are going to college and so forth. I mean, it may not, you know, it may not be your experience. You may not have been approached by a military recruiter. It depends on what you're doing, too. If you're on a college track, then you're probably not going to hear from them. You know?
Can I make a point about this? The opt-out is really, really important. And who opts out? Well, they're at Grant. They choose to opt out because they have parents that are college educated. And at Lincoln, they probably opt out there. I mean, your education, your parents has a lot to do with it. Even these parents that might not know what their student or their child is going to do afterwards might even suggest the military, and the idea of opting out just wouldn't occur to them. So the low income would be the least likely to be opt out, and the high income most likely to opt out. That would be a way of focusing on or identifying or their focus on the students of low income.
When you say, like, Grant opts out, do you mean more students at Grant opt out, or is
yes,
there...
Yes, that's okay. Exactly right.
Moving over to a topic a little bit more generalized, right? Moving away from Portland and moving away even from the U.S. With military operations overseas, right? What do you think is an appropriate replacement for a lot of this, right? A lot of people will say, well, we're going to these other spots for national security reasons and national defense, right? And we need a military to be able to protect ourselves from these other threats across the sea. What is a valid replacement in your mind for these types of areas? And that we don't have military recruitment or these types of stuff if we have nobody there.
You know, just recently, John Pilger, a documentarian, died and passed away. But he mentioned in an interview in about 2005, I think, that the U.S. government has chosen to overturn about 50 governments in the world. Now, I mean, they don't do this out of the kindness of their heart because they want it to be more democratic or... And Martin Luther King kind of expressed something in one of his speeches. He said, the U.S. has a morbid fear of communism. And by morbid fear, for example, in Cuba, we have sanctions against Cuba because they've chosen a different government. Are they free to choose their own type of government? No, they are not. They are under the domination of the U.S. And another example with it, you go on a long time, but in 1954, I think, in that government, they were going to give some idle land owned by the fruit company. They were just keeping it in case they needed it to grow more fruit. They were going to give some idle land to the peasants. This was more than the U.S. could tolerate. They overturned the government with another coup there. And it's just we don't have the right. Oh, I know. The thing was they were going to reimburse the people that owned the land. I think it was Dole Fruit Company, for the amount they had on the tax rolls. Oh, this was totally unacceptable. So the U.S. kind of dominates these governments. You either play ball or else you get sanctions. And I think it's absolutely cruel that Cuba does not have the freedom to choose their own type of government. Cuba is a country that sends doctors, not bombs, to the rest of the world. In Brazil, they had 10,000 doctors going to places that don't see doctors ever. And they have a deal worked out with the World Health Organization where Cuba gets the money and they share the money with the doctors. But that wasn't good enough for the president there of Brazil. He wanted the doctors to get all the money. So he kicked out 10,000 doctors out of Brazil.
Well, I do think you need to read more, because the U.S. government is in other countries. I mean, Vietnam's this big. They don't have an air force. They don't have submarines. And we're over there bombing the hell out of them? Come on. Iraq, the size of California, they didn't have an air force. They don't have a navy. And we pick on these countries and demolish them and demolish civilians. 27,000 dead in Palestine right now and counting. So we kill people, and it has nothing to do with Palestine, or, you know, might attack the U.S., or Iraq might attack the U.S., or Vietnam might attack the U.S. It is nothing about security. These countries are bumpered up against China, Russia, communist countries. Communism, do you study it in high school here? It has a lot of good things to it. But so it's not only are they attacking small countries that don't have the military to fight back, but they're trying to scare China and Russia with their military might. And again, on the communism level, people have choices to do what they want.
Right now, Iraq is trying to get the U.S. out of their country, but we're not going to leave. We have the largest military base in the world in Iraq.
And the biggest embassy in the world, biggest U.S. embassy
in
Iraq.
We have no plans to leave, but we're not even welcome there as far as the Iraqis are concerned.
Is that the Iraqi government that's trying to get us out, or is it rebels, or is it
the people?
The people. Going back to your comment about Palestine, where we are not sending troops, we are not sending
just money.
I mean, Israel's an ally of the U.S. It's nothing more than standard stuff that we were shipping to them beforehand, that we've been shipping to them since the 50s.
Our navy is over there.
To interject, so you are against, you know, I assume the military budget and giving money to fund other wars, correct?
Well, correct. I mean, okay. If you're giving money and then saying it's not us and Ukraine, but we're sending in millions and millions, Israel, we give $3 billion, mostly weapons. And then Palestine has nothing. So for the government of Gaza, which is Hamas, to finally say, we've just had this. We don't have any freedom. We don't have any rights. Prince Faisal in Saudi Arabia has said, make it a two-nation state. Let Palestine have their land back. It is their land. Let them have their land back, and then they have their own government to govern themselves. That's democracy. We're over there killing democracy.
I mean, many would argue that Iran is that Hamas is simply an Iranian backed
proxy force.
Proxy force, and that's an argument that
also,
they'll make.
Hamas was a. Was it the Palestinian Liberation Force, or was it Hamas that was elected? I feel like it was Hamas.
Our news isn't very good over here, but Hamas is the government of the people of Gaza. And if
so
they're getting help from another country, Israel's getting much more help from another country.
I mean, to be fair, there was no fighting at the time, and it was Hamas who was the ones who fired into Israel beginning this recent fighting.
They were fighting for their freedom.
Can I interject here?
Yes.
You know, Israel has a habit of kind of dictating what we hear about Israel. Hamas did something really terrible on October 7th, but history didn't start on October 7th. It started in 1948 with the Nakba, where they told people you had 10 minutes to get out of this out of the country and marched them out. One of the I read of a story where a woman was given a house and the coffee was still warm in the house that had been abandoned by the people that were forced to leave. It was 750,000 people, not all in one day, but they were forced to leave, and they had a massacre. Dari Hassan, I think, had a massacre of about 100 people, just lined them up on a wall and shot them, men, women, children. And then the word got out that there was a massacre and people were tempted to leave. One of the pieces of propaganda was that these Israelis left because they wanted to leave before there was a war, and then they're going to return to their homes after Israel was defeated. But there was no radio communication about that. It was a lie put out by Israel. And lately, just on Amy Goodman yesterday, on a radio show, they found out that this lie that there were rapes, or that there were beheading babies, and I can't remember the other lie. Oh, I know. It was the UNRWA thing. It was all made up. They have a control over the media in Israel and have a big significant control over the media right here in the United States. So I guess the two points here are history didn't start on October 7th. They've been abused since 1948.
Put in prison with no trials.
Right on. No trials whatsoever. And for as long as they wanted to do it, this abuse has gone on. And what would we do if we were kind of had our houses demolished, if just on some kind of a whim?
If we had to go through checkpoints to get to work, you know, if at Israel's whim, shipments of food and so forth were just cut off periodically. I mean, it was it's a terrible way to live, and people can't sustain that over a long period of time. You know, and it blows up, and that's what happened.
And so back to counter-recruitment.
Yeah.
We do want the students to look seriously about what they might find themselves doing. And we all have friends who've been in the military who didn't end up doing what they thought they'd do. So how would you feel if you yourself was put on one of those Navy ships over there and sitting offshore knowing that they'd just slaughtered 27,000 unarmed citizens, men, women, and children. And then they were giving them 200, they had to leave. They were supposed to get down to Egypt on foot and giving them 250 calories a day. That's a Cliff Bar.
Another thing I wanted to mention quickly is that the recruiting issue could get much worse in Portland very soon, and that there's a proposal before the Portland School Board now to start up a junior ROTC program in either summer or all of Portland's high schools. And we're really concerned about that because, you know, we feel like we've made good progress here in terms of limiting military recruiting in Portland schools. But if there's a junior ROTC program and students are wearing uniforms on days when they have those classes and drilling on the playground, and, you know, with air rifles and so forth, that a lot of the work that we've done to try to, you know, protect students from obnoxious military recruiting will go right down the tubes.
Can you explain for those who don't know what a junior ROTC program is?
Yeah, well, it's a program where the school district hires two retired military officers to teach certain classes, mostly on military history and that sort of thing. You know, again, students are drilling on the outside, you know, periodically, for, you know, like every week and so forth. A lot of schools have shooting ranges where they practice with their air rifles. I mean, they say that it's not about military recruiting, but that's what it's all about. It's really just another way to get into schools and sell the military. And there are lots and lots of JROTC programs all over the country in most major cities. Fortunately, in Portland, up to this point, we've been able to, you know, keep that from happening. But now there's a proposal again to do that, and so we're working hard to try to educate the community about it so that it doesn't come to fruition.
Do you have anything else you would like to share with our listeners before we end the interview today?
Well, I'd like to talk just about JROTC. It's really being pushed by one person on the school board, but the whole school board is going to have to vote on it. And he tried to say that you could get shot just going to a 7-Eleven or something like that. But there are a lot of things that happen in war that are maybe not as bad, but not similar to getting shot. For example, you can see some of your people blown, some of your comrades blown to pieces. You can suffer PTSD, and the causes of that kind of come later. They have trouble going to college after PTSD, and if you have PTSD from service, domestic violence goes up. So we pay in a big way. So we don't really want to have the military coming in to young students to sell sell a military, and just their presence sells the military. When they had the movie Top Gun, the recruitment for aviators in the Navy went up 400% just seeing the movie. And it's part of the big lie that when we intervene in these countries, that they're better off. We intervene in these countries, overturn them, and the idea is we're supposed to be kind of defending democracy. That's not at all what we're doing. Chile was a democracy. It got overturned. It was a democracy in Iran. It was overturned. Overturned by the U.S., that's right. And Jacobo Arbenz in Guatemala overturned a democracy. So it's the great lie, and the other lie part is that these countries are better off after we intervene. They're miserable after we intervene. So we just think that the military is doing some terrible things. They're taking advantage of young students who don't know. And I usually kind of present a list of books they can read that you can kind of be informed about what the U.S. is really doing, so that they don't, if they go in, they kind of go in with a knowledge of what kind of an organization they're involved with.
You know, I'd like to end up, too, with the counter-recruitment. We have students come up and thank us for being there. We have counselors and teachers come up. We have Teach Peace stickers, and we ask teachers if they'll wear them. They take them 100%. You know, teach peace, not war. You don't want junior ROTC in here teaching war. You want to teach peace. What's the alternative? Teach peace.
This segment was produced and aired on KBPS. To get groundbreaking interviews first, check us out on AM 1450, KBPS, Portland. I hope you're having a wonderful day, and good night.
If you'd like to support the Student Hour, please consider donating to our program at kbps.am and donating to our sponsors, Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like the Student Hour stay on the air. For more info, go to prp.fm and click on the big red heart, KBOO Community Radio. Support KBOO online at kboo.fm and X-Ray. Support X-Ray online at xray.fm. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Student Hour, student radio for the city of Portland. The Student Hour is produced by AM 1450 KBPS broadcasting students at Benson High School. On air since 1923, KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Thanks to our supporters, Portland Radio Project 99.1 FM KPRP LP Portland, your nonprofit community radio station online at prp.fm, and KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM and KBOO.fm, and X-Ray KXRY 107.1 FM and 91.1 FM online at xray.fm. And thanks to our listeners like you. This concludes our show for today. Thanks for joining us. Full episodes of the Student Hour are available on our website, kbps.am. That's kbps.am. KBPS.am.